Et Naim, Nikki Yasam Hilo, Nikki Machuptamaidu. Hello, everyone. My name is Hilo, and I'm Machuptamaidu. We acknowledge and are mindful that Chico State stands on lands that were originally occupied by the first people of this area, the Machupta, and we recognize their distinctive spiritual relationship with this land and the waters that run through campus. We are humbled that our campus resides upon sacred lands that have sustained the Machupta people for centuries and continue to do so today.
Okay, Teresa, we're recording.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of our podcast. We are First Generation, one of many. Our mission is to create an archive of discussions with and about first generation student experiences in and out of the classroom. We hope to continue raising awareness and understanding, provide voice for students and alum, as well as present resources for faculty, staff, and students working for and collaborating with first generation students. Super excited about today, and as well, I'm very excited to be able to co-host this along with Joshua Whittinghill. Hey, Josh, how are you today?
Great, Teresa. Good to see you again for the second time today, I think, right? We had a wonderful end of the year, event with our first year students for EOP. That was a wonderful time to hear from them and kind of see them again wrapping up their first year. It's the first cohort doing their first year of college entirely online. So that was interesting to hear some of their thoughts and just how some of them were excited about summer. Some of them were, you know, excited to do finals. So it's really fun to hear the first year students now. So today, like traditionally, we have some quotes that tie into our episode today. And you may have seen out there in the world somewhere this acronym STEM, or some of you may have even seen STEAM as the acronym. Today, we're going to focus on STEM, and so science, technology, engineering, and math. And I say STEAM because my daughter went to elementary school along with one of our guests' siblings as well. I think went to Parkview, right, Alberto?
Yeah. I'm a little bit in there as well.
Cool. And that's an elementary school here in Chico, California that focuses on STEAM. So they throw, instead of just science, technology, engineering, they throw art in there and then math. And so that's an interesting one. And a really fun project I got to work on with that school was get a Chico State art class that does murals. And my daughter and a couple of her friends went through and found women scientists and women mathematicians and women engineers and women And then they also got people of color in those in science, technology, engineering. And they gave a list of about 9 different people to the college students. And then the college students went through and researched some of those. And then they made a mural with about 6 different of those people up on an entire wall at the school. So that was really fun to add to that, right? To show the visual for a lot of students. They're like, hey, those people look like me. So that was really fun for the kindergarten through fifth grade to see. So to jump into these quotes, our first one comes from Reshma Saujani, and she is a lawyer, politician, but many of you might know her as the founder of Girls Who Code. And her quote is, if you haven't failed yet, you haven't tried anything. And that seems to be a very common theme, right? When you're looking at science, technology, engineering, and math, quite often what you set out to do doesn't end up being the result. And so you got to do it again, and maybe even again, right? And keep doing things over and over sometimes. So that's wonderful. Quote, then not really being myself in math or engineering or science anywhere in anything I studied, I have, though, one of my sort of idols or people I've always looked at and like, wow, that's fascinating, is a Hungarian mathematician named Paul Erdős. And he's famous for being this itinerant sort of, he just wandered and didn't really teach formally at a lot of places. And he would just wander around the country and go meeting other people, different places, and he would teach math to people. So I always found him fascinating. And 2 quotes from him I have. One of them, if numbers aren't beautiful, I don't know what is. That's straightforward, right to the point. And then the next one is a little bit more meaningful about success and failures and learning who we are. He says, it is not enough to be in the right place at the right time. You should also have an open mind at the right time. So those are our quotes, and getting us into talk about STEM a little bit more. We have two guests joining us. Our first guest is Robin Donatello. She is a Chico local and a Chico State alum. After a stint in Los Angeles for graduate school in biostatistics, she came back to Chico to join the math and statistics department in order to train the next generation of statisticians and data scientists. When she's not on campus, she's growing her own food for her family in their garden, or out adventuring with her dogs in Upper Park, or getting some reading and game time in. Welcome, Robin. Yep.
Thank you.
So I have to ask, of course, do you have a favorite game right now that you're...
Right now, I'm in the middle of Diablo 3 season 23 or whatever, but I'm only on break from Divinity Original Sin or something like that. I don't know.
But oh gosh, okay.
It's all PC games.
Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, well, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And it is my pleasure to introduce our next guest. So with us, we also have Alberto Rosales. He is a first-generation college student. He's in his last year at Chico State, where he is studying mechatronics engineering. He'll be graduating this spring 2021 semester. While on campus, he worked with us as an intern advisor in the Educational Opportunity Program. Within his field of study, he's extremely excited about automation engineering and electric vehicles. Hi, Alberto. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, super excited to dive into our podcast today, and super grateful for the both of you making time to join us in conversation. So before we jump in into what you're both doing, I'd like to get to know you both a little bit more. So I was wondering if you can share a little bit more about your beginnings or how you got into STEM. And then Robin, Alberto, whoever wants to start, may.
Okay, yeah, so I'll go first. So getting into STEM, I mean, in high school and elementary, I didn't really think about any of that stuff. I didn't think until my junior year of high school when I met Leah, when was a trio, I believe. She got me into the program to start thinking about college, because I knew I wanted to go to college, but I didn't know you had to take SATs or SATs. I didn't know you had to do any of this. So Leah kind of guided me and really pushed me to go to a four-year school. And once I started looking at programs at Chico State, because I was most interested in going there since I'm local, engineering was one of the fascinations I had after taking physics at high school. And I first actually was a civil engineering major once I got into college. So once I got into Chico State, I was a civil engineering major, and that was just my first like pick at it. I knew I wanted to do math or some kind of engineering process. But after talking to some advisors there, because I had a class and it was really boring, not gonna lie. It was really boring, did not like any of it. So I talked to advisors like, is this the right thing for me? Is this something I wanna do? And then they're like, well, what do you like about it? And I was like, well, I like the design process. I like the whole, you have to think about it. You play with numbers, you play with science, right? You hook up things and moves and stuff like that. And then my advisor tells me that, well, there's another major that like has things that moves and everything, and that's mechatronics. You know, it's a little bit of everything, mechanical, electrical, and automation. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me, like, well, do you want to like build a building that's just going to stand there and look pretty? Or do you want to build something that's going to move around and be robust and all these other applications? So I started doing my own research within this field, and I kind of fell in love with it. And so far in my 5 years here, I'm still liking it.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a great start. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
So this was a really interesting question for me to kind of reflect on and think about, like, how did I get started? And only now in reflection do I think that a lot of what got me into higher ed was actually to keep me off, like, the streets. And then that sounds weird, but, like, middle school, high school, I was hanging around. My friends were the ones that didn't go to school, were already graduated or had dropped out. So it made it like really easy to just, you know, ditch class like all the time. And I really wasn't impressed or liked the people who were on campus in high school. but I still liked certain classes and certain teachers. So there was still interest and drive at school. Just not at the academic piece, or the classroom piece, not the social piece. Because I liked learning kind of from a really early age. Part of it also was escapism. I don't want a retail job. If I keep going to school and I can live off financial aid and work study for as long as possible, I don't have to get a job. So I had a really, really long undergrad career. It just rolled. High school sort of rolled into college. Dubuque rolled into, I didn't have a plan. I was just taking classes. I was a biology major. And then I just kept taking math because I was okay at it. It was somewhat interesting. And then a professor at Butte came along and said, "You can't be a good math major if you don't take statistics." I'm like, "But I'm biology." But I took it anyhow, because when a professor says, "Hey, you would be good at this," I'm like, "Okay, I've got no other plans." Totally fell in love. Absolutely fell in love. So transferred to Chico. Also, easiest, lowest bar possible. Coming from Butte to Chico, didn't really have, no SATs, no, none of all of those tests, no. And kept doing biology, but picked up stat because it just seemed like the thing to do. So I was forever at Chico also. And it was sort of another one of those, a faculty, Dr. Wall here at chemistry, just recently retired, who said, "Hey, I think you would enjoy taking this advanced organic chemistry lab class instead of the normal one." Okay. Which then landed the conversation about what am I going to do with my biology and statistics majors? And they're like, "There's this thing called biostat." I'm like, "Oh, I had no idea." And so I rolled into grad school because I didn't want a job after undergrad.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little bit of that. And I was kind of looking at my job. I was like, "I want to do more than that. I don't want to work in a lab and blah, blah, blah." Because I had no idea what it was. So it was a lot. Yeah. Easiest road possible. Low bar but always kind of a real strong interest to learn new things. And it came with a lot of faculty encouragement. "Hey, I think you'd be good doing this." Okay. So non-traditional path for sure.
I know. And it's great what both of you shared, a little bit of things that are very common for first generation students, right? Not knowing that some of those things even exist that you need to go do. And then even once you're doing them, not knowing what else is available, because it's kind of like, "Well, I'm here and I know I got to keep my kind of head in this and stay focused." And you don't always get to see the peripheral view of what is there for you. So that's a great message that a lot of our listeners and other first generation students experience and know they're not alone in that process, right? And you made me laugh a couple of times because I can relate. I spent 9 years on my undergraduate degree.
Yeah, I had 10. Yeah. And to think now that we're asking students to get in, know what they want, get out in 4 years, it's like the pressure.
Oof. Yeah. And you throw that into a first generation student experience. Yeah. They're often the first year, second year, still trying to grapple with just navigating and feeling confident and comfortable in some of the situations and experiences and the classrooms they're in. They're all of a sudden learning, like you said, learning, being enrolled in classes and learning stuff they didn't even know existed before they got to college, because high schools don't offer those things in general for any student. So all those things. And I love what you said about statistics. I was the student who, when I had to take my math class in college, I said, "Well, math is fine. I can do it, but I don't really want to show up or do it." So I enrolled at Butte College, took my GE math. I showed up 4 days to class. I showed up for the first test, second test, third test, and the final. And I had a 93%. I thought, "Oh, great, all done." And I got a D because I didn't show up to class ever. So I had to retake it. So there's some of the hidden, you know, curriculum and barriers around that. And I thought, "Well, why do I have to show up to class? I'm doing the," but, and so there's those questions and things that happen for first generation students as well, navigating, balancing family responsibilities, work and class and all these things. So there's that. So I redid it, But then when I went on to my doctorate work, I had to take statistics, two or three different courses. And by the end of the first one, I finished everything. I thought, wow, stats was my favorite class. That was amazing because it helped me be better at what I do at work. But also I realized, oh, this is like art. It's puzzles. It's seeing these patterns, putting things together and making assumptions and hypotheses and then trying to see what happened with them. So, anyway, I love that part about stats as well. I know Alberto and I talked a little bit about stats back when he was taking it. I think was that what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? It was quite a while, but yeah. Same thing.
It can, and stats is one of those classes and topics, maybe like math in general. It depends on how it's taught. Either students love it because they see those connections with their other fields of interest, or it's the most boring, dry class and they hate it.
Yes. And then there's all the terms and phrases of what the different algorithms and different equations you have to do and all these theories to know. So, yeah. But it can be fun. So that kind of leads right into our next discussion topic, right? STEM is so broad when we have this acronym covering four different areas of science, technology, engineering, math. That's a lot. And we've heard a little bit about some of your focuses of what you're focused on in your area. And one thing before we get into the question though, is with first generation students, there's a lot of discussion and talk about capital and what that means, that students bring different things with them, whether it's navigational capital or social capital or familial capital, right? Some of those areas to then help them be successful as a student, because they don't necessarily get that guidance in the classrooms where they see the skills and the knowledge they have, they bring into the campus, can help them in those areas they're studying. So the question for you two is two part then here. It'd be great to hear if you could share, what are some of the projects or maybe one project or some of the research that you're currently working on? And then more of a broader one is, have you seen or how have you seen the different capital that you brought as a student benefit you in your progression as a student and then also as a faculty member? And maybe take a second, we can think about that. All right, Alberto, you have some stuff you want to share, it looks like?
Yeah, so first I'll touch upon like what projects and research I'm doing. So currently, I'm at your last year when you're a mechanical or mechatronic engineer, you have a capstone project, which is both semesters, your fall and spring semester, or spring and fall, whichever one you land in. And currently I'm working on trying to automate companies' shaker machines. So this machine goes up and shakes orchards, like the orchard trees, and tries to harvest like pistachios or nuts, things of that sort. So they have this huge machine that they want us to automate. So basically they want us to make the whole process, have no humans involved, maybe just one looking over it to make sure it's not crashing or anything. So my part of, so we have a group of five people, and me being the mechatronic engineer, I'm partly responsible with the vision system and the computer, the machine learning aspect of it. So currently I've been doing a lot of research on vision detection or object detection and machine learning. So currently it's already the end of semester, but I have a working object detection algorithm where I can detect multiple objects at the same time and detect certain key aspects that the company wanted us to detect as well. And then as well as making custom data sets for them to be able to recognize more objects and other objects that they might need in the future. But going on with that, I mean, I'm in a group of five people. So some capital that comes into that, I thought I brought in when I came into the STEM field, is just being a little bit more outgoing than others and being able to lead others in groups and being able to keep people together and make sure we're going on the right direction. A lot of people don't like speak up or call people out when they're not doing anything, and I'm not afraid to do that. So I think that's something that I brought into it. And yeah, I think that's what I have.
That's great. And I think from us knowing each other a little bit, of not just work, but our family situations, it looks like you also, and sounds like you bring in a lot of familial capital you learned of like working with younger siblings and helping give direction and being responsible for some of those things as the oldest sibling in the house to take care of, you know, the younger brothers as needed to help out. So that's cool. You bring that into the classroom and have that. Cause I know seeing you work in the office and watching you, you definitely have those skills for sure.
Yeah. And I'm the middle child, so not the oldest, but I know how to give directions to the younger one and know how to listen to the older one. So I know how to listen to directions as well. So something I brought in from familial background.
So, and I think, and I don't know if it's social capital. I don't know exactly what the box, I guess, would be, but I would say that the kind of like my outgoingness and just social butterflyness in general is kind of what allowed me to network throughout my undergrad career. In terms of like talking, being comfortable talking with faculty, learning who I can talk to about this barrier or this job or who knows who, so that I can find out this information that I needed. And just being able to navigate just situations of just when life would throw at you and kind of like shift underneath you, having that resiliency and being able to sort of pivot as needed. So kind of the because for me being first gen meant I didn't have really any family support at all through the entire college experience. Thankfully, I had kind of like 10 years to sort of figure it out. You know, again, that also allowed me in grad school to, I don't want to say like work the system, but it's like, okay, here's my background. Here's what I have. Who do I need to talk to get a job or get help? And you know, that led into when I got hired back here on Chico, part of the job proposal request was, hey, come build a data science program. Well, there was little oversight and little guidance when I got here. So it meant I could forge my own path. And so I was able to, well, leverage my existing familiarity with Chico, but also, just my ability to network with people and find out who has the resources that I need and put it together and kind of establish myself as a leader in data science here, which loops into my current project, which I've actually just got a grant for to start this fall. As I mentioned, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my degree. And so one of the things of this grant is to recruit. So I'm using kind of my networking and people I know and people who know these other people to recruit people to talk about how they're using data and science in their fields, food, agriculture, nutrition, human sciences, behavioral sciences, so that students can see, here's this thing I'm learning in class. Here's how I can apply to it with my real life. Here's how I can make a contribution. And they can start thinking about that earlier on so they could try to start navigating their own path. So it's kind of, yeah, I don't know if it's social. I don't know what type of capitalism it is. It's just, I don't know.
That project sounds amazing. Have you already started on it, or is it something you'll be starting up in these next couple of months?
Starting in fall. Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. That's amazing. I feel like that's something that I would have wanted to know more about, maybe being in like, you know, the first couple of years of college, because I feel I'm a first gen student too, and I never considered STEM at all. I actually stayed away from anything that I related STEM to be in terms of majors because I was so afraid of the math portion. And for math for me was just probably one of the toughest topics that I would do in school. One of the hardest things for me to get down. I just wouldn't be able to process it. So I strayed away a lot from it, but I feel like now if I was able to relate it more into like an everyday thing or daily life, or, you know, things that I'm surrounded by being from Chico, agriculture, if I knew how they used it then, that'd be something I probably would have been a little bit more interested in. So that's amazing.
Awesome.
Okay. So jumping into our next question, tell us a little bit about your issues or any challenges that you had or concerns in regards to being students or professionals within STEM. And what do you feel is crucial for other first-gen students, given your experiences, for other first-gen students to know, or what advice would you give them? Alberto, are you ready?
Yeah. I was just thinking a little bit, but
oh, you're fine.
Some issues, I mean, coming in, you're not going to see a lot of faculty like you. So that's something that you're going to see as well. It's just the nature of STEM. I don't know the percentage of Latinos or other racial backgrounds in STEM, but it's low. And then as well as back to women and other, it's low as well. But that's not something that should like deter you from going to it. In my case, I think it's something that fueled me to go into it more. I want to be able to be a role model to my little brother, my cousins, and everything, and show them that like we could do it as well. Anyone else can do it. Just because of our situation, it's not impossible to do something like this. Some challenges I had was just same thing. Like when you don't, faculty are not the same. You don't know how to be professional enough. It's kind of scary to go and ask them questions in office hours or anything. It's like, oh, what do I even say? How do I even approach them? Like, am I being unprofessional, or am I even asking the right questions? So that's one of the issues and challenges I had. I didn't really get to break those barriers until like sophomore year, where I just threw myself and I started going to office hours. I think it was my physics class. I started going to office hours every day just because I really needed the help. So I'll just sit outside his office hours every day and be like, hey, am I doing this correct? And ask the most polite way I can. He'll help me out in the office. And he also had a whiteboard out in the hallway where he would write out problems and help me out. And then it was nice because when I would do well on an exam, I would get the recognition. Like, he'll put a note on my exam, like, oh, like, good job. Or like, now I have to call you Mr. Rosales or something like that. So it was good to get that recognition. And once you start getting comfortable, you see like there's no problem anywhere or anything. It's just coming from your background, it's just scary at first. And then yeah. As I said, I wasn't good at math either. I actually sucked at it. So I think in high school, I got up to maybe like trig, if that. But I took the calculus readiness test once I got to Chico State, and it said I was calc ready, but I was like, I know my limitations, I'm not calc ready. That was probably a mistake. So I took pre-calc to just get my, because I wanted to get my algebra foundations down. I know if I go into calc, my algebra foundations are not going to be there. So after doing that, I was pretty much squared away. I mean, you do have to put in the hours. You know where you're at, so you need to go put in the hours, go to the library or wherever you like to study, and just put in those hours, use those extra problems. Just because some people are naturally better and don't have to study doesn't deter you. I mean, you just got to put in your time. Like, someone like can look at a problem like, oh, that's easy. Myself, I'm like, oh man, that might take me like 30 minutes. But yeah, like, it's just, you just got to be determined and go ahead and finish it. And then, yeah, some problems for first generation students, my challenges is just seeing people that are not the same as you, and then not having enough resources, let's say with like family or family friends. Cause I mean, in my family, I'm be the first one that's going to be in any professional in a STEM career. So I don't have anyone to relate this to, or any family friends that can be like, oh, how was it looking for a job in the engineering field? Or how was it after you graduated? So it's kind of just me navigating through the internet, asking people and just asking other professionals and not being scared. Most of them are happy to talk to you, so it's not scary at all.
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm glad you brought up the aspect of what population of students are within that major, the STEM major. So at Chico, and I actually looked it up because I was curious about it too. So on CSU Dashboard, which is the resource that I'm using at Chico State in fall of 2020, it's it's male dominated. So I'm looking specifically at the College of Engineering, Computer Science, and Construction Management.
Yeah.
And it's about 86% male, 14% female of enrollment. Mm-hmm. And then per ethnicity, it's 32% of students who identify as Hispanic, Latino, and then the majority are 42% of students who identify as white. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's and then the disparities between those two populations in that major versus all other majors and students of color is vast. So it's interesting to see the students that are choosing to be in that college and the majors that they're in. So thank you for sharing, Alberto. I appreciate that. No problem. Robin.
I have to say, hearing students say, I'm not a math person, like it hurts. It hurts because there is no such thing as not a math person. You know, Alberto, you hit it on the head. It's the hours and it's a perception. You think that person can just look at a problem and get it? That is few and far between. Like I've got some friends, you know, coming up through the math degree. There was maybe one student who could just look at it and get it. The rest of us busted our butt trying to figure out what the heck was going on. So not that's, if that's like, if there was one myth that I could just poof disappear, is that I'm not a math person. It's work. And where the professor can come in and do try, where they can make or break sometimes, is kind of comes back to what we're talking about with statistics, making it relevant to real life. And sometimes there's an understanding from the student though, is that this one piece that you're working on is you're not doing it just so that you know how to take a derivative or do algebra. It's because it's fundamental problem solving that will help you out in a bajillion other areas that you don't actually realize. It's really hard to convey that to a student because it's hard to the student understand. When am I ever going to learn this? Well, this one exact thing, how to find a root, probably not. But in the larger scope of things, understanding what you're doing with your image processing and your image identification, your machine learning model, that's linear algebra, 100% behind the box. So, okay, that I will get off my little soapbox now about that. My issues or the challenges that I mainly faced, you know, as a student in math, surprisingly wasn't, even though there was a gender bias in students and in math, there still is, still more male dominated, white male dominated. Probably my voice as a white person, I didn't experience any, you know, of that sort of division or lack of connection from the instructors, but there was a lot of, in stats, there's a lot of female instructors compared to math. So there's connections there. But it was financial. That was the biggest issue and challenge for me, is I can't take an unpaid internship, no matter how awesome it would be. I gotta work, you know, to like pay rent. And so, you know, I kind of feel like I missed out on a lot of opportunities. But I feel like from a faculty lens now, there's more out there that I either realized as a student or that was available as a student. I mean, I'm kind of old-ish. I mean, the resources for first gen and new students just weren't there. I feel like there's a lot more now, but how do you, as a student, do you even know what is potentially available? How do you know what you don't know? How do you know what there's to ask? So, you know, I'm kind of using my understanding and my experiences as a first-gen student to advocate and try to write grants to offer paid internships now, because that wasn't something that I could afford as a student. Finding ways to get these experiences to students without like either having it for units, because if I can't get dollars, the only currency faculty have are units, if it counts towards your degree. Or just like, yeah, I mean, that was really my biggest issue. I would say in terms of, you know, what I think other first-gen students, not advice, but like on this is just is ask, even if you maybe are not, you know, aren't able to be part of that EOP program or part of TRIO, go into that office and ask. Hey, what is there for me? You don't have to know the right questions. That goes for office hours too. I mean, it's just, well, faculty are different, but we want to see you in our office. We really, 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 really do. And it's okay if you don't know how to, there is no how to phrase a question. It may be intimidating because you're like, I don't know how to ask this. And if you just say, I don't get it, we need more information to understand what part you don't get, but we can work through that by asking more questions, which I can get may feel intimidating because then it's like, oh, I didn't ask it in the right way. They don't know what I'm talking about. It's like, work with us and we will be happy to work with you. Happy. So
that's awesome. Thank you for that. I appreciate that because I know, regardless of your major too, it's intimidating to reach out to professors and to ask for support or to go to office hours to utilize that resource. And thank you, Robin, for touching on that. Because my next question, what I wanted to know is what organizations at Chico State or what systems of support did you have in your higher education career?
So I could go first. So first, I got into EOP through Leah. I forget what the program's called, but not Upward Bound, but another one, I think it's called, Educational Talent Search. So she went in and helped students in high school to get into four-year university. So she introduced me to EOP. So I did the whole application and everything. And so EOP has been a great organization and support tool. Even if it's not for STEM or anything, it's just for like for support on moral support and everything and how to navigate through the university. So that was a good support. And then as well as, I think it was called, oh, I forget, but Josh, do you know what the program's called that Lupe runs? Lupe, down in the engineering college.
Oh, for Mesa?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Mesa, there you go. I forget the name all the time. So yeah, so I've enrolled in Mesa, I want to say maybe my sophomore year. I got into that program and it's just really helpful because they have a 24-hour study room. So I had a lot of late nights and they're just studying for classes, and then they do offer a lot of resources such as like personalized like STEM advising meetings and as well for my major, and then as well as to have a bunch of conferences that you can go to, research opportunities, they let you know what kind of research opportunities you can have, and as well as internship opportunities. So as far as the systems and organizations, support systems and organizations I've used, it's been mostly MESA and EOP. I can't really name any others, but that's mainly what I used.
Can I ask a quick question about MESA?
Yeah.
So from my perspective, I'm like going back to like when I was a student, like high school, you know, undergrad, MESA was always like, oh, that's for like super smart kids. Like you got to get a 4 just to even get into the program.
Yeah.
And it's like, a lot of the scholarships or a lot of these opportunities, you have to already be high achieving to get there. And if you're balancing a job and family or whatever, B's get degrees, sometimes C's.
Yeah.
So like, how is that still the case? Is that an accurate?
No, I don't want to say it's accurate. I mean, I wouldn't say everyone in there has a 4.0, but I'd say usually people there late at night, they're doing relatively well. But as well to get in there, you just need to meet like certain income requirements and first generation requirements.
Good. Okay.
And then I didn't know about it, like how you were stating that you don't know what's out there. I didn't know it was there. I was just asking, like, what do you guys do in this room? And they're like, oh, it's MESA. I was like, oh, okay. And then That's how I learned through a lot of programs. Like, oh, what are you guys doing? Oh, what is this about? I'm one to shy away from asking like questions like that to other classmates. So I'm like, oh, what are you guys doing? Oh, where are you guys going? Stuff like that. So
that's good.
A lot of information about resources that I might need and stuff like that. So, yeah.
That's good. Thank you. And for student listeners, just to clarify, if they are interested or wanting to look into MESSA, is there a requirement as far as what class standing you have to be in to join, or can you do it at any point in college?
No, I believe from my understanding, you can join as soon as you are enrolled in Chico State your freshman year. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. And thank you for sharing.
Yeah. I have one more piece. I think they have another part of it called CAT mentoring, the Wildcat mentoring. So like if you come in as a freshman, they kind of want that because they pair you with seniors or juniors that have been through it all, and they kind of mentor you through the classes that you should take, and they study with you and give you kind of tips and tricks to navigate your way through it. So yeah.
Okay. These are all the resources that like either I don't even know if they existed when I was an undergrad. They might have, but I was just up in the math tutoring lab doing my own stuff for like hours upon hours. So
what support systems or organizations did you utilize, or did you have that you knew about, Robin, in your time and for when you were in your higher ed?
Pretty much, it was math club. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of participated just as a you know normal student, but I served on the math club like board for a while, so I can actually like see what math club does to sort of support the rest of the students in terms of like running the tutoring lab at the time. But also it gave me a stronger connection with faculty. And because again, you get to talk to faculty out and hang out with them outside of class. It really humanizes them. And then, you know, they sent me to a Women in Mathematics conference, and that was, you know, my first exposure to conference travel. And I was hooked. I loved it. I loved going somewhere else other than Chico, because I can't afford to go anywhere on my own. I couldn't travel, you know. Someone wants to send me to Lincoln, North Nebraska? Sure, if they're paying for it. But then I get to meet people outside of my bubble. And it's like, oh, you're doing this cool stuff. And so it was really a really good experience to have as an undergrad, especially because there was no expectations of me. I wasn't there to present. I was there to participate. So that was, I mean, that was kind of the only, I want to say, support system that I had, the faculty that I felt I could talk to, because they were humans like me, and just a collaborator, you know, a group of people that, a club, I guess, a student club.
Yeah, that's honestly, student clubs, at least for me during my, when I was in college, were probably my saving grace, because not only is it for support and a resource in that sense, but I also met some of my closest friends because we were going through shared and similar experiences together. Yes. And it's easier. Yeah. And it's relatable, and it's easier to kind of vent or talk through things and to have those types of discussions that you know you need, but it's hard to find that person to talk to and to feel comfortable enough with that. So it's kind of the one thing that helps you in multiple different ways, even when you're not even looking for it in terms of support. Thank you so much both for sharing. And so before time's up, I mean, you both are clearly the experts in your fields and what you're studying and what you're doing as far as your careers, or what you will be doing in your career. Is there anything that we might have missed or that Josh and I didn't bring up that you want to talk about, or something that you think is important for students and students maybe wanting to go into STEM for them to know before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I'd say, I mean, if you're on the verge of going in STEM or and like an undeclared major and you want to do something, I'd say give it a try. The worst thing you can find out is that's not for you. I mean, maybe a semester or two worth of time, but you still get to learn some cool math things. So I think keep going. And I mean, if you still like it, but you do feel like this is not your thing, just know that imposter syndrome is a thing. You're gonna feel like you're not good at anything, or you're not the best or anything, or at top of your class, but just put in the time and you'll see that you're going to be better at it. You're not going to be feeling like you don't know what you're doing. If you're just not putting in the work and go to class and then hit up your friend, hey, can I get the homework? Of course, you're not going to know what's going on. You're going to feel like an imposter. You're just copying down numbers that don't relate anything to you. But if you do the design, you do the whole application, that's where you get to see that numbers are truly beautiful. Like, they just make sense. They just make sense. Like, okay, I know what this is relating to. So you do feel like an imposter at times. And I've been there multiple times where I'm just like, oh, I don't know what's going on. But you just got to put in the time, go to the library, go wherever you need to study, go to office hours, ask questions, make study groups, and just keep studying, and you'll get out of it eventually.
And I like, as you mentioned, that the imposter syndrome, we had a whole episode talking about that. It's come up other episodes, but also, no matter what field you go into or what you're doing in life, even if it's not your work, if it's a hobby, or if it's even at your house or whatever it might be, there's always people around you who are smarter than you and know more than you. So when you meet those people, embrace it. What can you learn from those people? Because they've obviously gotten there. No one got there just being born knowing all those things. Everyone has put in time, effort, energy. So I think that's a wonderful message, you know, because that's going to happen. Like I said, no matter what field you're involved with, you're going to meet people like that. So that's going to be help benefit you to even get better, to learn from them. Did you have anything you wanted to add, Robin?
Yeah. And no matter what stage in your career you are, I'm still meeting people. It's like, oh, dude, you're doing really cool stuff. I don't know if I could do that. You know, it did come up. I definitely want to kind of come back and reiterate that anyone can learn anything. There's no such thing as like not a math person. You know, it's, we've heard like the whole growth mindset. It's, you can learn new things. You just may have to figure out how you can learn it. Anyone can learn anything. And you know, if you're finding yourself with staring at trying to study for hours and hours and not getting it, look at how you're studying or where you're studying or what you're doing and see if there's a change to make, because you will be able to find a way that works for you. So
for sure. And I think it's interesting in talking about language a little bit earlier as we were preparing for the episode, and that math, science, all these things, that's a whole nother language we were touching on, right? That I asked people, how many of you speak two languages fluently often in classes? And not too many people will raise their hand. And then I'll say, how many of you are math majors? How many of you are engineering majors? And then more people raise their hand. And I say, so you speak a whole nother language. Because if you were to give me something you wrote out around engineering or math, I would look at it and say, what language is that? Right. So it is a whole nother language. And that's part of that. I think some of the hurdles that I see with students is they're having to learn a whole nother language because it's not in letters, it's in numbers quite often. So you have to comprehend all of that, which then adds to the learning curve when it comes to the STEM areas we're talking about. Okay, well, unfortunately, time, if we look at numbers, has come to an end for us today. That social construct that keeps us sometimes focused, but also away from some of the things we'd like to do, like more of this discussion would be wonderful to keep going. So it's time for the recommendations. Alberto, you want to kick us off with what you have to share today?
Yeah. If you go into STEM, specifically engineering, if you want to get internships or more prestigious, I guess, jobs, I'll just recommend, because I mean, no one told me this, start doing personal projects as early as you can. It doesn't need to be something crazy, big. Just go to your local Goodwill, buy something that has a motor, take it apart, get the motor, and you can build your own little machines like that. You don't have to buy fancy parts. And I mean, there's websites and distributors that are pretty cheap as well. So I'd definitely recommend that. And then as well as I'd recommend just don't be afraid. Keep asking questions and keep going.
Excellent. Thank you. And Robin, you have a few for us today, right?
I do. Okay. Kind of comes along with Alberto's suggestion about projects is ask for research opportunities. Go to a faculty that you like. Is there something that you're doing that I can help on? So there's that. And honestly, get more active on social media in a professional manner. Find the people in your field doing cool things, find out who they're following. And that ties back into thinking ahead about how do you want to contribute after you graduate to, like, you know, your community or society or whatever. There's a lot of cool people who are very active on things like Twitter. Academic Twitter.
Yeah. Yes. Twitter is fantastic for education and academics. There's a lot out there. I think that's what blows up my phone most of the day on Twitter, is about, you know, 10 to 20 different, hey, suggested for you. And they're all academic and educational things I follow, or people that are connected to other things I follow. Did you want to touch on the documentary that you mentioned as a recommendation too?
Yes. Coded Bias is a documentation that where a researcher, woman of color, was uncovering flaws in facial recognition technology. It's available on Netflix, and I'm actually trying to work with our campus on seeing if I can get that to show. Fantastic introduction and exploration of what it means to encode bias into algorithms that can have unforeseen and long-standing problems, and they can uphold systemic racism issues and policies.
Yeah, thank you for that one. That's a great one, and it leads right into my first recommendation for the day. I have a list of like 6 or 7, but I'll do 2 real quick and mention a couple more maybe. But the first one leads right into a book by Kathy O'Neill. It's called Weapons of Math Destruction: How Big Data Increases Inequality and Threatens Democracy. And she touches on some of the very similar things, how algorithms, especially in hiring practices, has been detrimental across the United States. The second one that I have is, if you are interested in statistics, or you know you have to take statistics and you want to learn more about it, there's a great book out there. It's only about 400 and something pages, but it's written as a graphic novel. And it's amazing. The whole book is graphic novel with comics and explanations of statistics. And it's by a statistician, Andy Field. He also has a YouTube channel you can follow, and he explains parts of his book and he answers other questions and walks through specific algorithms and specific equations in there. And so those will be in the show notes, both of those. Teresa, what do you have for us today?
Yeah, thank you. So I'm just going to briefly share a podcast. It's called Conexiones, Historias de Latinos en STEM. So essentially, it's a podcast that goes and talks about, it's made with Latinos, Latinas, Latinx community in mind. And they do interviews where they talk about and with people who work currently in the STEM field. And it's just really informal, super cool type of conversating style that they do it in. So, and it just, you get to know more about the professionals who work within startup companies, technology, and kind of like the history and their background as to how they got there. So it's pretty nice. Definitely recommend it. I know it's for sure on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you want to take a listen and check it out.
Great. Well, again, thank you both for being here. Teresa, thanks for being on this journey with me still. I love being on the episodes with you all the time. Our STEM guests, a wonderful conversation, and we look forward to the next time we get to share. So thanks everybody out there for listening. See you on the next episode.
Thank you.